If you go far enough back, it was William's form master who was responsible for the whole thing. Mr. Strong had set for homework more French than it was convenient for William to learn. Who would waste the precious hours of a summer evening over French verbs? Certainly not William. In the morning, however, things somehow seemed different. William lay in bed and considered the matter.
"Mother, I don't think I feel quite well enough to go to school this morning," he called faintly.
Mrs. Brown entered the room looking distressed. She smoothed his pillow. "Poor little boy," she said tenderly. "Where's the pain?"
"All over," said William, playing for safety. But the patient's father, when summoned, was having none of it. "You better get up as quickly as you can," he said. "You'll be late for school, and doubtless they'll know how to deal with that."
They did know how to deal with that. They knew, too, how to deal with William's complete ignorance on the subject of French verbs. He went home to lunch embittered and disillusioned with life. On the way, Ginger, Henry and Douglas began to discuss the history lesson. The history master had given them a graphic account of the life of St. Francis of Assisi. William had paid little attention, but Ginger remembered it all. William began to follow the discussion.
"Yes, but why'd he do it?" he said.
"Well, he just got kind of fed up with things and had visions and things, and he took some things of his father's to sell to get money to start it."
"Crumbs! Wasn't his father mad?"
"Yes, but that didn't matter. He was a saint, was St. Francis, so he could sell his father's things if he liked. And he and his friends took the money and got long sort of clothes and went and lived away in a little house by themselves. And he used to preach to animals and to people and call everything brother and sister. And they cooked all their own stuff to eat and..."
"Jolly fine, it sounds," said William enviously.
"And did their people let them?"
"They couldn't stop them," said Ginger. "And Francis, he was the head one, and the others all called themselves Franciscans, and they built churches and things."
They had reached the gate of William's house now, and William turned in slowly. Lunch increased still further William's grievances. No one inquired after his health, though he tried to look pale and ill and refused a second helping of rice pudding, with a meaning,
"No, thank you, not today. I would if I felt all right, thank you very much."
Even that elicited no anxious inquiries.
"No one," thought William as he finished up the rice pudding in secret in the larder afterwards, "no one else in the world surely had such a callous family. It would just serve them right if he went off like St. Francis and never came back."
He met Henry and Ginger and Douglas again, as usual, on the way to afternoon school.
"I've been thinking a lot about that saint man. I'd a lot sooner be a saint than keep going to school and learning things like French verbs without any sense in them. I'd much sooner be a saint, wouldn't you?"
The other outlaws looked doubtful.
"They wouldn't let us," said Henry.
"They can't stop us being saints," said William piously, "and doing good and preaching, not if we have visions, and I feel as if I could have visions quite easy."
The outlaws had slackened their pace.
"What do we have to do first?" said Ginger.
"Sell some of our father's things to get money," said William firmly. "Then we find a place and get the right sort of clothes to wear, sort of long things. Dressing gowns would do," said Douglas.
"All right," said William.
"Where'll we live?" said Henry.
"We ought to build a place, but till we've built it, we can live in the old barn," said William.
"And what'll we be called? We can't be the outlaws now we're saints, I suppose."
"And what were they called?"
"Franciscans, after Francis. He was the head one."
"Well, if there's going to be any head one," said William, "I'm going to be him."
None of them denied to William the position of leader. It was his by right. He had always led, and he was a leader they were proud to follow.
"Well, they just put Kuns onto the end of his name," said Henry. "Franciscans. So we'll be Williamkins."
"Sounds kind of funny," said Ginger dubiously.
"I think it sounds jolly fine," said William proudly.
The first meeting of the Williamkins was held directly after breakfast the next morning, a Saturday, in the old barn. They'd all left notes dictated by William on their bedroom mantelpieces, announcing that they were now saints and had left home forever. They inspected the possessions that they'd looted from their unsuspecting fathers. William had appropriated a pair of slippers, Douglas an inkstand, Ginger had two ties, and Henry a pair of gloves. They looked at their spoils with proud satisfaction.
We'd better not put on our saint robes yet, not till we've been down to the village to sell the things. Then we'll put 'em on and start preaching and things. Oh, and remember, from now on, we've got to call each other Saint, and call everything else brother or sister.
Everything?
Well, yes, he did. The other man did.
Yes, but William, you've got to call me Saint William now, Ginger. All right, you call me Saint Ginger.
All right, I'm going to Saint Ginger.
Saint William.
All right.
Well, where are you going to sell the slippers?
Brother slippers, corrected William.
Well, I'm going to sell brother slippers at Mr. Marsh's, if he'll buy 'em.
And I'll take brother ties along too, said Ginger.
And Henry take brother gloves, and Douglas brother inkstand.
Sister inkstand, said Douglas. William said we...
Saint William, corrected William patiently.
Well, Saint William said we could call things brother or sister, and my inkstand's going to be sister.
Swank, said Saint Ginger severely. Always wanted to be different from other people.
Mr. Marsh kept a second-hand shop at the end of the village. He refused to allow them more than sixpence each.
Mean!
Exploded St. William indignantly, as soon as they'd emerged from Mr. Marsh's dingy little sanctum.
I suppose now we're saints, said St. Ginger piously, that we've got to forgive folks what wrong us like that.
Oh, I'm not going to be that sort of saint, said St. William firmly. Back at the barn, they donned their dressing gowns.
Now what do we do first, said St. Ginger.
Preaching to animals, said William. Let's go across to Jenks's farm and try on them. They crept rather cautiously into the farmyard. I'll do brother cows, said St. William, and St. Ginger do brother pigs, and St. Douglas do brother goats, and St. Henry do sister hens. They approached their various audiences. Ginger leant over the pigsty, then he turned to William, who was already striking an attitude before his congregation of cows, and said,
I say, what have I got to say to 'em?
At that moment, Brother Goat, being approached too nearly by St. Douglas, butted the saintly stomach, and St. Douglas sat down suddenly and heavily. Brother Goat, evidently enjoying this form of entertainment, returned to the charge. St. Douglas fled to the accompaniment of an uproarious farmyard commotion. Farmer Jenks appeared, and seeing his old enemies, the outlaws, actually within his precincts, he uttered a yell of fury and darted down upon them. The saints fled swiftly, St. Douglas holding up his two-flowing robe as he went. Brother Goat had given St. Douglas a good start, and he reached the barn first.
Well, said St. William, panting, I've finished with preaching to animals. They must have changed a good bit since his time, that's all I can say.
What do we do now? Said St. Ginger.
I should almost think it's time for dinner, said William.
It was decided that Douglas and Henry should go down to the village to purchase provisions for the meal. It was decided also that they should go in their dressing gowns. For their midday meal, the two saints purchased a large bag of chocolate creams, another of bullseyes, and, to form the more solid part of the meal, four cream buns. Ginger and William were sitting comfortably in the old barn when the two emissaries returned.
Ha! We've had a nice time, exploded St. Henry. All the boys in the place running after us and shouting at us. Douglas has tore his robe and I've fallen in the mud in mine.
Well, they've got to last you all the rest of your life, said St. William, so you ought to take more care of them. And added, with more interest,
what have you got for dinner?
When they had eaten, they rested for a short time from their labours.
Well, I suppose they know now at home that we've gone for good, said Henry with a sigh.
Ginger looked out of the little window anxiously.
Yes, I only hope to goodness they won't come and try and fetch us back, he said.
But he need not have troubled. Each family thought that the missing member was having lunch with one of the others, and felt no anxiety, only a great relief. And none of the notes upon the mantelpieces had been found.
What'll we do now? Said William.
They built a church, said Ginger.
Well, come on, said William. Let's see if we can find any stones lying about.
They wandered down the road. They still wore their dressing gowns, but they wore them with a sheepish air. Fortunately, the road was deserted. They looked up and down. Then St. Ginger gave a yell of triumph. The road was being mended, and there, by the roadside, among other materials, lay a little heap of bricks. Moreover, the bricks were unattended. It was the British workman's dinner hour.
Crumbs, said the Williamkins in delight. They fell upon the bricks and bore them off in triumph. Soon they had a pile of them just outside the barn, where they had resolved to build the church.
But as they paid their last visit for bricks, they met a little crowd of other children who burst into loud, jeering cries.
"Oh, look at them, dear little girl is wearing nice long pinnies. Oh, my! Oh, don't they look sweet? Hello, little darlings!"
William flung aside his saintly robe and closed with the leader. The other saints closed with the others. The saints, smaller in number and size than the other side, most decidedly got the best of it, though not without many casualties. The other side took to its heels. St. William picked his robe up from the mud and began to put it on. "Don't see much sense in wearing these things," he said.
"You ought to have preached to 'em, not fought 'em," said Ginger severely.
"Well, I bet he wouldn't have preached to 'em if they'd started making fun of him. He'd have fought 'em all right."
"No, he wouldn't," said Ginger firmly. "He didn't believe in fighting."
"Well, anyway," said St. William, "let's get a move on building that church." They returned to the field. But the British workman had also returned from his dinner hour. With lurid oaths, he had tracked them down and came upon the saints just as they'd laboriously laid the first row of bricks for the first wall. He burst upon them with fury. They did not stay to argue. They fled, Henry casting aside his splendid robe of multicoloured bath toweling into a ditch to accelerate his flight. The British workmen tired first, after throwing a brick at their retreating forms. The Williamkins gathered together dejectedly in the barn. They sat down and surveyed each other. "Seems to me," said William, "it's a wearing kind of life." It was cold. It had begun to rain.
"Brother Rain," said Ginger brightly.
"Yes, and I should think it's about sister tea time," said William. "And what are we going to buy it, her, with? How are we going to get money?" They thought deeply for a minute. "Well," said William at last, voicing the opinion of the whole order, "I'm just about sick of being a saint." The rest looked relieved. "Yes, I've had enough," said William. "There's no sense in it. And I'm almost dying of cold and hunger, and I'm going home." They set off homeward, cold and wet and bruised, and very hungry. The saintly repast, though enjoyable at the time, had proved singularly unsustaining. But their troubles were not over. As they went through the village, they stopped in front of Mr. Marsh's shop window. There, in the very middle, were William's father's slippers, Douglas's father's inkstand, Ginger's father's tie, and Henry's father's gloves, all marked at 1 shilling. The hearts of the Williamkins stood still. The thought of their fathers seeing their prized possessions reposing in Mr. Marsh's window, marked 1 shilling, was a horrid one. It had not seemed to matter this morning. This morning they were leaving their homes forever. It did seem to matter this evening. This evening they were returning to their homes. They entered the shop and demanded them. Mr. Marsh was adamant. In the end, Henry fetched his sixpence, William a treasured penknife, Ginger a compass, and Douglas a broken steam engine, and their paternal possessions were handed back. They went home dejectedly through the rain. William discovered with relief that his father had not yet come home. He found his note unopened still upon the mantelpiece. He tore it up. He tidied himself superficially. He went downstairs.
"Had a nice day, dear?" said his mother.
He disdained to answer the question.
"There's just an hour before tea," she went on. "Hadn't you better be doing your homework, dear?"
He considered. One might as well drink of tragedy to the very dregs while one was about it. It would be a rotten ending to a rotten day. Besides, there was no doubt about it. Mr. Strong was going to make himself very disagreeable indeed if he didn't know those French verbs for Monday. He might as well.
If he'd had any idea how rotten it was being a saint, he jolly well wouldn't have wasted a whole Saturday over it.
He took down a French grammar and sat down moodily before it, without troubling to put it the right way up.